Hello and welcome to this week's Opening Bell podcast. I'm boxing news editor Tris Dixon, joined as always by Matt Christie. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm well, as always.
And we have a third amigo this week with John Dennen. John, how are things?
Good. Pretty excited about this special guest appearance.
Well, welcome back. I mean, it's almost a promotion. Technically it's not, but it's almost a promotion that you've been invited to sit alongside us this week.
It feels like a promotion.
But one of the reasons you're here is we wanted to speak about your recent trip to Las Vegas, where you watched, among others, Lomachenko, Juan Manuel Marquez, Timothy Bradley, Orlando Salido, and a whole host of others. What was your standout moment from your recent trip to Las Vegas?
The sort of
without that stuff you tried to pull on your expenses.
Let's not mention that. Just the ring entrances for Marquez and Bradley, it just sort of, you know, there's nothing like that big fight feeling, and just, you know, the stadium was full, the top rank put on a great show, and it just sort of created the sense that an amazing fight was about to happen. It didn't quite, you know, kick off that way in the ring, but it was a very sort of interesting fight to watch, quite a stressful one. I actually found
there were times when it looked like it was going to kick off in there, but then it just, like you said, it just never really caught fire like it could have done.
Yeah, there were those sort of moments where they sort of, you know, they let their punches go, and then Bradley got back to his boxing and sort of, you know, really fought his fight and made Marquez fight his own fight.
Anything you'd like to ask, Matt? Well, we've got an exalted guest in our company.
So I get to talk about Las Vegas again.
without
actually having been there this year. Okay, right, cool. No, John, I mean, I was really interested to hear about the Nonito Donaire meeting and what have you, because you spoke really fondly about that. Just tell everybody a bit about that.
Well, I was lucky enough to sort of sit down with Nonito and Don McRae, who's writing a feature for us, on the interview, and it was just, you know, I was surprised we got so much time with him, and he was so, you know, really spoke about everything, the fallout with his father, becoming a father himself, the fight with Rigondo, sort of what, you know, why he boxes and why he's going to keep on boxing, what it all means to him. And it was just sort of, you didn't really need to ask that many questions. You could just sit there eating your steak listening to him, you know, well, not prattling on, but whatever a nice word for that is.
Yeah,
it's just fascinating.
How did you have your steak?
Rare, like man.
In Nonito Donaire's interviews more recently, he's talked a lot about becoming a dad. Were there any signs that he's maybe not focused completely on the job still?
I mean, what he said about the Rigondo fight is that his corner, you know, his baby had just been born, and his corner had said to him, you know, as the fight is, you know, slipping away from him, they said, you know, do it for your family, think of your son. And he said that was just the wrong thing to say, because then he was thinking, you know, of other things outside of fighting, outside of being a fighter. He was saying you can't think about anything outside of the ring whilst you're in there fighting. But he does seem, you know, he completely dotes on his, you know, on his baby, and the first thing he was saying was how strong his son was, even though he was, what, you know, a few months old or something. So yeah, and he did seem sort of relaxed and contented, and he, you know, he was eating pretty well too.
How did he have his
steak? A three-course dinner, we understand, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, great pudding as well, sort of apple crumble, I think.
Were you guys drinking?
We were, yeah.
All
I mean,
of
not,
you?
Not getting, no, I was on Diet Coke, obviously.
What, because you were working?
Because I was working. Yeah.
With three shots of rum.
Yeah, well, I make bad choices when I have a drink, so.
I thought you were about to say when you work, but yeah, that
well,
too.
Yeah, that too. So I try to avoid drinking in front of people.
Okay. in crowded areas.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so Nonito was having a glass of wine or two, which was a bit of a surprise. You know, he did look, but
because he's only fighting in a few weeks' time, isn't he? He got the rematch with Viktor Dzarchinian.
Yeah.
So interesting. Obviously, one of the highlights for you out there was that you were able to see in his professional debut the freak they call Lomachenko. you've seen a lot of Lomachenko in the amateurs, haven't you? And in the WSB.
Yeah.
So you've probably seen as much of him in the Western world as anybody else. What did you make of his professional debut? And do you think he'll be ready for Orlando Salido next year, who you also saw on the bill?
Yeah, I genuinely do. I think that's a really interesting fight. I think we've seen the skills of Lomachenko, the fact that he was merciless to the body as well. And he was in for his pro debut against a good opponent. And he just sort of, you know, he just owned him and took him out pretty quickly as well, but showed some of his skills as well. Whereas, you know, Salido's a hardened pro, looks really tough. But you can sort of see Lomachenko taking, you know, winning the first half of that fight, and it's the second half of that fight that gets interesting, because we've never seen Lomachenko go beyond five rounds, which is how far they go and it went in the World Series of Boxing. So actually, I think that's a really good fight, and I think Lomachenko can win it.
So how long before Lomachenko can join these mythical pound-for-pound ranks? Will he be sort of 3-0, 4-0?
Let's put him in now. Why not? We got Rigondo in there.
Yeah, I think Rigondo's win over Danaer slightly gets the edge.
Yeah, I suppose beating Jose Ramirez isn't quite.
It's not same. Quite there, no.
But yeah, but I think soon. I think, you know, if he's going for a world title in his second fight, and if that's in January of 2014, he's got to go. You know, he surely will fight some good people as well in the rest of 2014. So he could be getting in the pound for pound list soon. If I'm not getting carried away, I might just be overexcited.
I mean, it is crazy, Matt, isn't it? When you look at Lomachenko and what he's doing and the way he could feasibly go about things, and you think the guy could retire, be a Hall of Famer, an undisputed champion, and leave the sport 15-0.
It's bizarre. It goes against...
It's crazy, isn't it? He's on that much of a fast, steep curve.
Yeah,
With the goals people are setting him.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I bow to John's knowledge on Lomachenko. I haven't seen him fight nearly as many times as John has. And I haven't got that, and as a result, I haven't got that confidence. I'm not saying I'd pick Salido over him, but I think it shows the faith that he's gotten in himself and the people around him have got in him to pitch him in with a fight like that. Okay, Salido isn't one of the premier world champions in boxing, but he's certainly one of the toughest. And if he comes through that fight and he looks good in that fight, then absolutely the world is oyster. But if you go back through boxing history and the first thing you think of is the likes of Pete Rademacher, who fought for the world title in his debut, what Lomachenko is doing here is unprecedented.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fascinating ride to be on, the Lomachenko ride. Just on another note, in Las Vegas, while you were there, and in the magazine this week, you've done an interesting interview with... Glenn Tapia, who we know is managed by Pat Lynch, who used to look after Arturo Gatti. What did you make of Glenn Tapia, who's got a fight with James Kirtland coming up?
Yeah, he seems like he was really interesting to talk to. Like, we didn't speak for that long, but he was really open straight away, talking about, you know, friends who had died, and, you know, again, what boxing means to him and why he's doing it. So it was one of those sort of surreal moments when you're standing in the lush Wynn Hotel, and, you know, Glenn Tapia's talking about this sort of harsh background in Jersey and what's got him into this tough sport. And it seems to be, you know, fighting Kirkland is, you know, winning that would put him on boxing fans' radars. So he's someone to watch, I think.
What else happened in Vegas that you're not going to make stay in Vegas, that you're going to tell us all about now, that hasn't been either in your blog or on the website or in the magazine?
I did quite a lot on the website, so I'm not sure there's a lot.
I did do a lot of walking over there, I heard.
I had a little explore, you know. I took my first selfie on my phone, but when you're alone somewhere, you've got haven't got a lot else to do.
That's not actually what I heard, though. I actually heard about something about the Sky crew leaving you at the Thomas and Mack Center.
I've actually blocked that from my mind. It was so traumatic. But yeah, no, the Thomas and Mack is in the middle of nowhere. It was on the Friday night show, which was quite gritty. Everyone was getting knocked out. And then I asked someone inside how to get back to my hotel. They're like, I'll just go out, get a taxi. I went outside and I was in this deserted car park and they just locked all the doors and there was no one there. And just, but like, why have a show there? It was impossible. And like, Bob Mee had expressly told me, well, he said left or right, one of them, he had basically said it's almost certain death. I'm not quite sure why. He hadn't expanded on that.
just as long as you remember which answer, which way it was, left or right.
Exactly. So I just didn't dare leave. I mean, I got back eventually, phoned a taxi, but the taxi didn't want to come pick me up. I'm not saying I nearly died, but...
Close to death.
Pretty much.
Okay. All in all, an enjoyable trip, though, was it?
Oh, yeah. It was brilliant. There's so many moments that were sort of, you know, just are going to stay with you. You know, like chatting with Nenito Donaire, the way Glenn Tapia was, you know, the fight itself and seeing the start of Lomachenko, what could be a very special career. So, yeah.
What happens next for Timothy Bradley? I mean, he sort of didn't say much after the fight and hasn't said much in interviews since. What would you like to see Bradley do?
Personally, I think, you know, there's a good case for a Pacquiao rematch. That was an unjust decision for most people who saw it. From what I can tell, it seemed to really bother Bradley and his team that, you know, they got the result and got vilified for it. So, you know, in boxing terms, the way to put that right is to, you know, is to do it again.
Make amends in the ring. Yeah, definitely.
But it doesn't seem like there's a huge drumbeat outside of sort of me to see that.
Well, I think it left such a sour taste, didn't it, that people aren't willing, you know, people don't want to go back there. I think there are some fights that leave such a sour taste, you just don't want to see it again in case the same thing happens or something worse happens, I think. Sometimes it has happened. The one that springs to mind is Lennox and Evander Holyfield, the draw that left a sour taste, and they got to do it again by public demand. But one of the things that it might be is that they're in such a rich talent pool around the light welterweight and welterweight divisions that there's so many more attractive options or so many possible attractive options out there for them. And one of them is now Ruslan Provodnikov, who obviously gave Timothy Bradley absolute nightmares earlier in the year, who's just coming off a fantastic win over Mike Alvarado down in Denver. Matt Provodnikov, we've known about him for a while, but he's on a real streak, isn't he? Even though he lost to Bradley, he's now become one of the major players in that division.
Yeah, he really has. He really has. And I think Timothy Bradley's stock, if it wasn't already high after beating Marquez the week before, has now got even higher with Provodnikov stopping Alvarado so convincingly. And, you know, we mentioned Pacquiao, a potential Pacquiao-Bradley rematch, which incidentally I'd really like to see. I really would like to see that. But one of the best fights now out there to be made is Pacquiao-Provodnikov for me.
I think when you talk about Pacquiao, the interesting thing is who knows what Pacquiao's got left in the tank. And we won't find out until the Brandon Rios fight, because that Marquez knockout was one of the ones that can change the course of a career. So I think obviously if Pacquiao can get back on the horse against Rios, then all those fights become viable. And in fact, the fight that I think might do the best business in China, if they were to have it over there, would be Pacquiao-Provodnikov. What do you make of that, John?
Siberia is actually quite close to China, isn't it? So have that in Macau.
They call them the Siberian Rocky, don't they? And you'd have the Filipino whirlwind. I mean, style-wise, it would be an attractive fight, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, well, I think everyone wants to see Provodnikov now, and it just makes sense that if Pacquiao comes through Rios, which I think he probably will.
So, Matt, Carl Frampton made something of a statement in Belfast. Looked like it came alive via the TV on Saturday night. The fans really coming out for Frampton now, 8,000 or 9,000 in the Odyssey Arena. Were you impressed with Frampton?
Yeah, he seems to be. To be completely honest with you, I wasn't overly familiar with his French opponent beforehand. I mean, I'd seen bits and bobs, but not enough really to have any kind of educated opinion on him. But Frampton, to me, what he's doing, if you're just judging him, he seems to be getting better with each fight. And I think whereas I know he always, whenever you mention Frampton, quickly the words or the name Scott Quigg follows. And whereas I used to find that a really tough fight to pick, I'm kind of edging towards Frampton as both of their careers progress now.
Even though Scott's, you know, he's got a world title, he's beaten Rendell Munro, who beat Martinez. Wouldn't you say Quigg's still one step ahead of Carl?
I think on paper he probably is, but I think with the way the styles are, I think Quigg, I was a little bit underwhelmed by his last performance, the draw, even though he fought extremely well for the second half of that fight. early on. I felt there was a few flaws in his game which I hadn't noticed before. I think all I'm saying is that whereas I would find it really, really hard to pick now, I think my instinct is now telling me that Frampton would beat Scott Quigg. There, I said it.
You disagree, don't you, John?
Well, no, I'm still at the stage before where I find it really, really hard to pick. So, as a coward, I'd firmly sit on the fence.
Well, I'm sure that's not what you said yesterday, but okay. All right, elsewhere in the magazine this week, we're looking ahead to some good fights this weekend. Sinchenko-Brook, it was only when I really started thinking about it for the preview that it really sort of came to life for me. And I actually really do like the match on paper. I think providing Sinchenko can make some kind of impact by the 7th or 8th round, it could get really interesting in the later rounds. Matt, how do you see it going, Brook and Sinchenko?
I must admit, I'm still a bit underwhelmed by it. I think it's a decent enough test for Kell Brook at this stage.
Well, Sinchenko's the best guy he's fought by some distance.
Yeah, that's based on the fact that he beat Ricky Hatton, based on the fact that he's won a world championship, a WBA world championship at that. But I don't know. I mean, I'd struggle to pick a winner out of Carson Jones and Sinchenko, to be perfectly honest with you. I think Sinchenko's stock has risen, understandably, because he beat a Ricky Hatton, but he beat an old Ricky Hatton, and he was that fight was kind of touch and go 50-50 until that finishing body blow in the ninth.
Interesting, John.
I mean, I really like it as a fight. I suppose it makes sense because we all know Sinchenko for, like you say, the Ricky Hatton fight, and there are still question marks about Kell Brook. You know, we've seen him perform poorly, and we've also seen him look excellent. So I guess a lot of it is going to be down to Kell Brook, what shape he comes in at, how's he doing the weight, that kind of thing, what kind of form he's in. So it is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think you can criticise a match when someone's fighting the best guy he's fought. But that's me. I obviously think Sinchenko is a better fighter than Rafael Jaskovic and Love Mwandu and those guys. I think Sinchenko is a better fighter than those guys, but maybe that's just me. And I know obviously where people had their hopes up to see Brook and Devin Alexander, and where Brook's obviously had his name mentioned alongside Amir Khan a lot, then you look at Sinchenko, who you would say is probably down a peg or two from those guys. But I think against Brook, I think it's a good measuring stick for Brook. But I'm also looking forward to seeing how Anthony Joshua does against another, I think it's fair to call him a measuring stick, Paul Batlin, who's taken some good guys several rounds in the pros. You were at Anthony Joshua's debut. What did you take out of Anthony Joshua's debut at the O2 Arena, John?
The whole bout was sort of... I think we've seen Joshua box better in the amateurs. I think it was all a little bit hectic, but he showed some signs of what he could do. He didn't charge in carelessly, and he's still, he's got knockout power, doesn't he? So I still don't think... Anthony Joshua is as complete a boxer as some of his Olympic teammates, but there still seems to be great potential there. So it's just going to be quite interesting watching how he develops, what he does against Butlin when the sort of he's not going to have the same pressure as the headline act that in many ways he was at the O2, sort of sharing the bill with Scott Quigg. So I think he might look better this time around than he did in his debut.
You talk about pressure, and with Blackpool's Brian Rose fighting in Sheffield rather than Blackpool, perhaps the pressure will be off him a little bit, but I think he's really going to have his hands full with Javier Maciel this weekend. I can't see any prices for an upset there, and I've tentatively, I would tentatively side with Rose, but I think Maciel's got a real underdog's chance there for that. Just talking about Brook and Sinchenko, I mean, Matt, obviously you said the fight hasn't really captured your imagination yet. The bookies have Sinchenko, some of them, as much as a 6-1 underdog.
No, I mean, that's crazy prices, really. I think that's unfair on Sinchenko. I think what I was saying about Sinchenko earlier, what I did want to add, though, is what Brook must be aware of. What I was really impressed with Sinchenko was his mental attitude going into that fight. He came into the ring with a Manchester United shirt on against Ricky Hatton, and that really shows a man with some pretty huge balls, let's face it. So I'm not saying that Sinchenko has got no chance, but I do make Brook a clear favourite, but by no means a 6-1 would no by no means make Sinchenko a 6-1 underdog.
Okay. With all of the fights that are going on this weekend, what's the one that most stands out to you? If you could be ringside for one fight, not one show, but one fight this weekend, what fight would you want to be at?
Probably. I mean, I would like to see Bernard Hopkins, because I've never been ringside for a Bernard Hopkins fight, but the Peter Quillen Gabriel Rosado fight screams fun to me for as long as it lasts.
Yeah,
which is on the undercard.
I think that's an interesting shout. Rosado's tough. He got a draw in Las Vegas against. He pushed Jaleon Love really tough, really all the way in Las Vegas before Love. I think he tested positive after that fight. Rosado deserves another shot after that. There was talk of him fighting Matthew Macklin later in the year, which obviously is not going to happen as Macklin's got Willie Nelson. But him and Kid Chocolate is a good fight. I mean, Chocolate does everything quite well. Hot Chocolate, as you called him the other day. But do you know what? It's funny. We laugh about that now. I think I did a Hot Prospect with Peter Quillen several years ago, and the headline was Hot Chocolate. So you must have just got it from that. But this weekend, you have touched upon it. Veteran Bernard Hopkins, who's 48 years old now, is defending his world title against Kara Murat. John, can you make any case for a Murat win?
Hopkins is so old. It's impossible. Sooner or later he's got to lose, and maybe Murat could hit the, strike it right.
Really, you think he can do something that Tavoris Cloud and all those countless other guys who were younger, fitter, stronger, you think Murat's the guy who could do it?
No. But I think the case you have to make is watching Bernard Hopkins. How long can he keep on going like this? Maybe he's not an alien. Maybe his human age will catch up with him.
I think Murat is the easiest fight Hopkins has had for a long time, Matt.
Yeah, since he was the guy who fought before the Roy Jones rematch. He fought someone which was kind of off the. I can't remember who it was. It was kind of a warm-up fight for the Roy Jones fight.
And when I remember Hopkins taking warm-up fights, I just think of Murad Hacker. Do you remember that?
Oh, God. But the only thing, and very kind of echoing what John says, if Caro Murat wins, to me, isn't the upset of the year, because Bernard Hopkins is 48 years old. As John says, sooner or later, if he keeps on fighting, he's going to lose, and he's going to look his age. But yeah, I mean, I would imagine Hopkins is far too professional to and old, long in the tooth to take this guy lightly.
You were there. Nathan Cleverley.
He must be a bit
Murat.
Underwhelmed by this. But yeah. And Murat, I thought, performed well. I saw an interview that we've got on our website with Nathan Cleverley, kind of previewing this fight, and he said the outclass Murat. I didn't get that from that fight at all. I thought Murat was in there. I thought he was landing some good shots. He gave Cleverley plenty to think about before the finish in the 10th round. But I certainly didn't see enough there for someone who's going to beat this old magician, Bernard Hopkins.
Enrico Ornelas.
That's the one.
Off.
Yeah.
Also on that bill, Deontay Wilder's fighting Nikolai Fertha, the guy that we know as the right-hand puncher who really shook up Tyson Fury. That's about the only thing positive, I think, out of this fight, is that you get to compare Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury to an extent. Or do you think there's more to this fight than meets the eye?
I think that summary is about fair, but it's going to be hard to know how much to read into it, really. You know, you've got to be expecting Wilder to take him out like he's taken out everyone else.
Mm.
I think the interesting thing there was Fertha. We had an interview a few weeks ago, and he really was not speaking like a confident man. Let's face it, I can't remember his exact words, but he said he was going to go in there and give it a go, but he more or less said, I expect to get knocked out.
Yeah.
Which is shocking, really.
Would he be number 30? Would that make Wilder 30-0?
Yeah, it would. 30-0 with 30 knockouts. But potentially, if I hadn't have read those comments from Fertha, I would say that this would have been Wilder's toughest assignment to date.
Mm, interesting. Maybe you've fallen for a bit of psychology.
Maybe I have.
Maybe you have. So what are you working on at the moment then, Matt? What's going on out there?
Well, I'm actually just putting together a short piece about James Toney's comeback. We've just got an exclusive bit online where he's with Q&A. The plan is for Toney to fight November the 14th. Bethnal Green make his British debut, the grand old age of 45, in the prize fighter tournament, which was quite shocking news, really.
You wonder if the board will have anything to say about that, well, because they blocked Franz Botha fighting here a couple of years ago, didn't they?
Exactly, James Toney, you don't know, he's rarely in good physical, he hasn't been in good physical condition since he was...
25?
Yeah, well, since he was at middleweight, really. And also, his speech is dreadful, and it doesn't indicate that there's a lot of good things going on in that brain, really. So I wouldn't be surprised if James Toney didn't compete, but I suspect they've already sold a lot of tickets on the back of his name.
Yeah. John, what's going on for you out there at the moment?
I'm keeping an eye on the Amateur World Championships, which are going on right now in Kazakhstan. We've just seen Andrew Selby, the younger brother of British champion Lee Selby, beat the local fighter in the quarterfinal for a medal, which is a huge achievement because... the Kazakhs, to put it mildly, have not been losing in this tournament so far.
And fair play. I mean, you know, people talk about the judges and the officiating. From where we were standing, it looked a close fight.
Yeah, it did. It did, but you do worry just because...
they're home.
Yeah, they're at home. Yeah. Everything seemed to be going their way. But, class springs eternal, and Selby's been a quality amateur for the last couple of years now. So if you could finally get, you got world silver in 2011, if you could finally get world gold, that would be big for Britain.
Got some interesting stuff in the mag this week, Matt. What would you highlight? What would you say is, sorry, I'm not just holding it on John's features. What for you jumps out this week?
For me, I think Paulie Malignaggi, he's our guest columnist this week. As ever, he's readable, interesting, intelligent, articulate guy. Whether you're a fan of his in the ring or not, he's always someone you want to pay attention to. So that, I think, is interesting. We've also got his opponent on, I think it's December 7th, is it, in Brooklyn, Zab Judah. We've also got some exclusive stuff from him. I think that's an interesting fight. I don't think it's going to be fight of the year, but I think Brooklyn will be buzzing for that one.
Yeah, I agree. John, what jumps out for you in the magazine this week?
Great amateur section this week, as always.
As always.
Yeah, so we had, my intriguing Glenn Tapia feature is in there as well. We've got Anthony Fowler, there's the last...
How about some stuff that you haven't done, John? How about tapping someone off?
Great editor's letter this week.
There we go, that's more like it. Okay. Talking about the editor's letter, actually... since I've written that, it's come to light that Jamie McDonald has been stripped and won't be reinstated as the IBF bantamweight champion, which is, I think there's no other word for it other than outrageous. It's the most diabolical move I can recall from a governing body in some time. Jamie McDonald came up the hard way, did things the hard way, British Commonwealth European champion, became world champion on a massive night in Doncaster. His dream came true 6 months later, and it seems like there was a lot going on behind the scenes that we probably won't ever know the ins and outs of completely. And he was stripped of his title this week without stepping foot in the ring with the belt. And I think it is a dismal state of affairs for that to have happened. And outrage, I think, is the word, and it probably doesn't do it justice. One thing I will say is that Jamie has taken it all in his stride and vowed to win his title back, but I can't help but feel immensely frustrated for Jamie McDonald, who should be feeling wronged, heartbroken, devastated, and furious with the IBF. But he's very much seems to be getting back on the bike. He's getting back in the gym and try and sort it out so he can win the title back in the ring. and let's, you know, where we're impartial, we sit on the fence, but let's hope he can get his title back one way or another, because I don't think it's fair that it's been taken from him. And on that happy note, I think we will love you and leave you. I will just add that we did a podcast 2 weeks ago. I know it's been a break. We've had a break. We did have a break last week. We did do one a fortnight ago. Unfortunately, we had some technical issues at this end. And so it did not see the light of day, which was particularly frustrating, as we had Ashley Theophane in, and it was really good, but heads rolled for that, didn't they, Matt?
Just slightly.
So anyway, but we will be back next week. It might be just Matt and myself, because John's sat out most of the time.
Was that bad?
I tell you what, that's the hook. Join us next week to find out who will be here. In the meantime, thanks a lot for joining us, and two of us will be back next week.